You are listening to the cycling podcast at the Giro d'Italia, supported by Science in Sport. Today we are in Apeldoorn.
Cozze ci tene, cozze, cozze vicine, non spigudeci ora, non spigudeci ora.
Hello, my name's Richard Moore. I'm with Lionel Burney.
Hello, Richard.
And Daniel Freeb.
Hello.
And we are at the Giro d'Italia, day one, and we're going to be here the whole race, operating a squad rotation system. The three of us are all here for the opening weekend. Then Lionel and I will be covering the first week, Daniel and Lionel the second week, and myself and Daniel the third week. Is that right? I think I've got that right.
Yeah, that is right. Yeah, it's going to be great, isn't it?
It's going to be fantastic, and it's got off to a cracking start, and we're going to talk all about that in a moment or two. You heard at the start there our new Giro jingle, and also a little message for our sponsor for the Giro, Science and Sport. Thank you very much to them. It's thanks to them that we are bringing you these daily free podcasts, along with our other sponsor, Eurosport. And Science and Sport are also supporting our Kilometre Zero series. We're producing 9 Kilometre Zeros at this Giro, 3 a week, beginning on Monday. So we're all looking forward to that. Tell us about the music, though, Daniel.
That music was laid on by a London-based folk group called Amaraterra, new friends of the podcast. Amaraterra play pizzico music, which is a kind of folk music that comes from Salerno in the south of Italy, where you'll be next week. So look them up, amaraterra.co.uk. They've got a gig on tomorrow in London, unfortunately sold out, but they've got a lot of gigs coming up that they would love to see you at.
I should have mentioned as well, in connection with our new sponsor, Science and Sport, they are offering 20% off to podcast listeners during the Giro, and there's a special code that you'll need to get your 20% off. I'll give that later in the episode. We didn't do a regular episode this week, so we're going to do what we usually do, which is Lionel's news roundup briefly. We'll cover that, and then we'll get back to talking about the Giro. So Lionel, can you give us the news roundup, please?
I can indeed, yeah. The world of cycling was dominated really by a couple of incidents, certainly from a British cycling perspective. Shane Sutton resigned after the brouhaha and fallout of allegations that he'd made inappropriate comments to Jessica Varnish and to Paralympian riders. An independent review into the culture at British cycling has been commissioned. Then there was the news that Simon Yates had tested positive for an asthma drug called terbutaline. His Orica Greenedge team claim that it's simply a case of the team doctor forgetting to apply for a therapeutic use exemption. We'll follow that story as it develops. In the racing at the Tour of Romandy, which was a cracking race, I think, Nairo Quintana won that as he continues his build-up to the Tour. The stage wins from Marcel Kittel. Thibaut Pinot won his first World Tour time trial, and Chris Froome went on the attack and won a stage. The Tour de Yorkshire was another thrilling race, well, certainly the last stage was, which was won by Thomas Vauclair, a very popular winner of a truly brilliant, really anarchic stage into Scarborough. The Dutch also did very well there. Dylan Groenewegen and Danny van Poppel won the other two stages of the men's race, and Kirsten Wild won the women's race, which is the richest event on the women's calendar. The middle day was somewhat dominated by the failure of an aeroplane which was supposed to relay TV pictures, so we didn't see an awful lot of the action on Saturday. But it's all about the Giro d'Italia now and for the next 3 weeks, so let's get back to that.
It is, although you mentioned the women's Tour de Yorkshire, and we should also say that we made a little announcement the other day that we're launching a women's podcast, the cycling podcast Femina, and that will launch in June, and we're really excited about that. We've got Orla Shinawy involved in that, and we'll have others involved in that too, and more details will be forthcoming.
There we are then, the 2016 Giro d'Italia is underway. That was the crowd cheering Fabio Sabatini, the first rider to tackle the opening stage time trial here in Apeldoorn. The Etix Quickstep rider has just rolled down the pink ramp in the centre of the velodrome here, which hosted the 2011 Track World Championships, and he's raced off out of the velodrome. They've dropped a section of the track away so that he can follow the course out into the streets of Apeldoorn. A fantastic atmosphere in here. The lights are dimmed. There's a pink glow all around. The centre of the track's full of VIPs who are enjoying a glass of wine, something to eat. Pretty much everybody held up their camera phone to take a picture of Sabatini. The stands are full. And here we go, the second rider, Mirko Maestri of Bardiani. And the riders will carry on rolling out like that at 1 minute intervals throughout the rest of the afternoon.
So we heard there some sounds from today, the opening day in Apeldoorn. What an incredible crowd. It's a Friday, and I was curious as to where all these people, well, where they should actually be on a Friday. And one of our colleagues told me that yesterday, the 5th of May, was Dutch, it was Liberation Day in Holland, which has been a national holiday since 1990. And because it fell on a Thursday this year, a lot of people took the Friday off as well and it made a long weekend of it. So that might partially explain the huge crowds. But we were just speaking there to one of the Giro organisation officials who reckoned the crowds here were twice the size that they were in Belfast a couple of years ago, and they were pretty big there. So a phenomenal show. The presentation on the Thursday evening similarly, but the first stage today, crowds were absolutely phenomenal, weren't they?
They always are when the Grand Tours come to the Netherlands, it seems. Utrecht, the Tour de France start last year, was a real huge occasion. Very similar day today, and perhaps not quite as warm, but really very warm for early May today, wasn't it? It did feel like the true start of the Grand Tour season.
We misjudged our sun cream a little bit, didn't we, Lionel? It was pretty hot out there by the team buses, and it was a phenomenal win for Tom Dumoulin. And you know, we've been talking quite a lot about Giant Alpecin this year. Our paths have crossed on several occasions. And that was their first win of the season. And you did feel that things were starting to turn around for them the last couple of weeks. John Degenkolb was back. Warren Barguil is riding well. And Dumoulin's been coming into form. He's second in three time trials up till today. And he won today by a hundredth of a second.
Yeah, and initially I didn't think it'd been a particularly good performance in the sense that, well, really the measuring stick was Primož Roglič, the Slovenian rider for Lotto Jumbo, the other big Dutch team here. He'd set the fastest time, and he's not noted as one of the best time trialists in the world. He's certainly decent against the clock, but that was a big surprise. And when I saw Dumoulin come in on, well, just a fraction of a second ahead of him, that seemed to suggest that Dumoulin hadn't gone all that well. But then we saw Cancellara come in well down, Michael Hepburn come in well down, and Dumoulin himself said that in terms of watts, in terms of power output, it hadn't been his best time trial, but it was good enough, wasn't it?
Same average speed as Rob Hatch in the Trainer Road Challenge, so there was nothing exceptional about that at all. You're looking puzzled, Lionel, but that is apparently true. Apparently, isn't it? It is.
53.212 kilometres
no,
per hour.
No, sorry, that's not true. Someone made that up.
Well,
the person who we've charged with running our Twitter account just made that up then. I didn't check the facts. A lesson there for me.
Often sort of sarcasm and irony doesn't come across terribly well on Twitter, does it?
That's very true. But Dumoulin, I was in the just by the start area when Cancellara appeared. Now, Cancellara apparently had stomach flu or virus, stomach virus the previous day and spent the day in bed. A colleague of ours went to interview him a couple of days ago and said that he was quite under the weather then. He struggled through an interview but appeared from bed and went back to bed. So there were some doubts about whether he really was ill, but I think he was ill. He looked very nervous by the start house. He was he was very serious, very focused. He kept taking a swig of water and spitting out again. And we were indoors, which didn't seem very polite. But he was pacing up and down on his bike, if you can picture that. And he did, to me, looked quite apprehensive. And he was well below par, I think, wasn't he there?
Yeah, I think he was. But Dumoulin, coming back to him, I think last year's prologue, or it wasn't a prologue, was it, Richard? It was a time trial that kicked off the Tour de France in Utrecht. It was perfect practice. It was a perfect dress rehearsal. It didn't feel like that to him at the time. He was very disappointed not to have won. But I think he was fourth then behind Rowan Dennis. And, you know, he experienced all of the pressure there, all of the expectation of the home crowd. And then he came here, similar distance or slightly shorter, 9.8 kilometres. And he really thrived under that pressure, didn't he? The course did suit him. It was very flat. It was a little bit windy out there, wasn't it? Some big gears I saw being used. Bob Jungels, I think the 58.11 was his biggest gear. Pretty huge line of that.
You can turn that.
Turn.
You're a man for the big gear.
Get that over once or twice.
Big ring, before. Bernie.
Yeah.
The line of the Chilterns.
Yeah, I was going to say about Fabian Cancellara, the worst double bluff ever, because he announced that he wasn't feeling well, which is very unusual for any sports person to give any sort of advantage to his opponents in the days leading up to a big objective. And this really was a big objective for Cancellara, his last attempt to try and win the pink jersey at the Giro d'Italia.
No?
And
first,
yeah, well, yeah, he was never worn it before, and this was his last chance, one suspects, unless something amazing happens in the coming days, to add a pink jersey to his collection. The other rider that really sort of jumped out to me from the top 10 or so was Andre Amador, who was very highly placed overall last year. Movistar rider, you can't even call him a sort of an outsider. You have to put him in the top bracket of favourites. And I know they're only playing for seconds on a day like today, but we see it so often in the Grand Tours, the importance of getting a high overall position early on, particularly when in the early days here in the Netherlands, it's going to be all about keeping out of trouble, making sure that there's no significant time losses in either crashes or crosswinds or whatever we may be dealt with in the next couple of days. And then, of course, the climbing starts in the south of Italy reasonably gently at first, but Movistar will be absolutely delighted to have one of their main hopes already up there.
And it's not just that time lost or gained, is it, Lionel? We've said many times before in Grand Tours, in prologues, opening time trials, it's a great indicator of how springy someone's legs are feeling, how good their general condition is. And, you know, you look at Nibali today, and I think it was a very respectable performance from him. He was 15th, Richard? Am I looking in the right place? 14th, 15th, 17th?
16th.
16th. Got there in the end.
Like probably the best. Drunk man playing darts.
The best,
one, wasn't it?
Of the overall contenders. Richard, if you kindly tell me where the others were.
Well, Mika Landa was well down. In fact, he was almost caught by Tom Dumoulin, I think. Marcel Kittel, not an overall contender, admittedly, but worth noting his ride. He started off his career as a time trialist, of course, didn't he? And he was sixth, so
and
fifth.
With time bonuses
fifth.
Available over the next
so
few days,
poised,
very much a pink jersey contender.
Poised to take pink. Stefan Kung, the young BMC rider, was a second down at the intermediate time check, and then he hit the barriers, he came off. So he might have been a challenger for the stage, perhaps lost his chance. But yeah, I mean, Kittel, exceptional ride by him, obviously, as you say, going well, Daniel. And, you know, Mikel Landa is going well. This is not the sort of stage for him, but losing 43 seconds... on such a short distance when in a Grand Tour where time trialling is going to be important doesn't perhaps bode well for him.
Eurosport, the home of cycling.
Okay, you heard there our Eurosport jingle. Thank you very much to them for their continued sponsorship for the Giro. As at the Tour last year, we're going to be doing a daily award of a Pedaleur de Charme, giving a t-shirt to a rider. We thought we'd leave that until we get to Italy to start that. So the
we
first,
get our act together a bit. Yeah, that shambolic first attempt to...
First Pedaleur de Charme will be Tuesday's stage in Italy. Nominations welcome. Hashtag PDC. That'll do. Hashtag PDC. As at the Tour last year, it covers a wide range of attributes. Pedaleur de Charme.
We not get a lot of darts tweets. PDC, isn't that the World Darts Championship? No? Anyway...
It'll do. PDC Giro. Hashtag PDC Giro. That'll do. So we'll start that on Tuesday. And we've got some lovely t-shirts, new design, and they are available on our website for sale as well. So we'll do that. Start that on Tuesday. We've got more to talk about from today's opening stage. I just noticed that Giant Opposin had four riders in the top 13. A pretty strong team performance by them. Surprising?
It was, in the sense that their results, as we've noted many times before, have not been great this year, largely due to the crash they had in Calpe in January, which wiped out six of their team, really, in the short term. Their service course is around the corner. They're playing on home turf. And they were obviously very motivated, weren't they?
Yeah, you mentioned when we were just chatting off air there, Daniel, that a couple of surprises today. Ilnir Zakarin was 38th, well down, and Rigoberto Urán, both strong time trialists just behind him. Not very good days for them.
Now, you talk about teams, and it was interesting sort of just going around the buses today in Apeldoorn, getting the opinions of a few team managers, riders, which we'll hear from later, just about the teams and the strength of the various contenders' teams. And, you know, Nibali's is obviously very tried and tested. It's the group that he's had with him for two or three years now in Grand Tours. Urán, a bit of a difference of opinion over whether Candela bought a strong team here or not. They've got, you know, Davide Formolo is going to be supporting Urán in the mountains, a young Italian who came to prominence last year when he won a stage in Liguria. Simon Clark as the road captain, but pretty inexperienced, I think.
you've got to mention Joe Dombrowski at this point, also Mountain Domestique, and he's doing recording an audio diary for the cycling podcast, for Friends of the Podcast. So one hopes that they have an interesting Giro, if nothing else.
Very taciturn on this issue, Lionel.
Well, it's very, very early
like speculation,
days,
isn't
it? I don't want to wheel out my cliche again, but it's always, yeah, it's too early to say, isn't it? Until we see a bit of a shakedown on the climbs. That's what's so great about the Giro, though. When you look at the Garibaldi, the road book, and look at the stage profiles and certainly the distance of some of those stages in the first week, you know, there's some big 220-kilometre stages. There's a lot of hilly stages. There's a few cheeky little uphill finishes before we even get to the monster final week, which you two will be covering. I'll be watching from the comfort of my armchair. I'm looking forward to seeing the final shakedown.
Reclining and then in that.
Everything.
Eating grapes.
Exactly.
In your toga.
Yeah, very accurate picture you paint there, Daniel, of my home life. Until we see a little bit of testing of legs on those early hilly stages, it's really hard to speculate about who is going to be right.
We're going to hear a lot of speculation, aren't we, later from a lot of pundits that we spoke to.
We are going to. We also spoke to Jack Alpecin, as it happened. We spoke to a couple of people involved with the team. You spoke to Mark Reith, the sports director, a few weeks ago, didn't you, Daniel?
I did. Just before we hear from Mark Reith, who's a coach at Giant Alpecin, just on Dumoulin.
Coach or sports director?
Coach. They call them coaches there. A bit like the Sky Carers and what do they call
well,
them?
Well, no, Sky have coaches and DSs. Okay, and I thought Giant Alpecin were the same.
Winning behaviours. No, they're all coaches at Giant Alpecin. Very particular about that, in fact. I think I'm right in saying. Tom Dumoulin, he's a different kind of character as far as, you know, Dutch cycling is concerned. Different background, from quite a middle-class background. His father is the head of fertility at the University of Maastricht's hospital. Quite a renowned researcher on IVF treatments, etc. And his parents had absolutely no interest in cycling, were quite against him cycling, I think, when he was growing up. He signed initially for, well, he was going to turn pro with Cervelo Test Team, but that team, of course, dissolved at the end of 2010, wasn't it? Went to Rabobank for a year, didn't like it at their Continental Division team, and has found a home that he seems very comfortable with. Giant Alpecin could become even more important next year because, you know, more and more rumours over the last few days that John Degenkolb is very keen on, or could be very keen on, a move to Trek. Anyway, so
we hear from Mark Reith, who you spoke to a little bit ago about Tom Dumoulin and exactly where he's at and what his aims are this year. We'll hear from him and then we'll come back and we've got some Ivan Spekenbrink from today as well. But let's hear from Mark Reith.
No, I think in general he can still improve as a climber. Of course, the more you're doing it in races, the more you're doing it in training, I think still the better you can be. If you look to how he is, then of course the steep climbs in the Vuelta were good, but they were short. In the Giro they will be a little bit longer, and that's again a difference. And yeah, that's also why we think we need to do it step by step. We cannot expect immediately that he's going to do a top GC yet in this year in the Giro, but we will go of course for the best possible results in those stages, and then we will see what the outcome is on the end. Of course, we knew that he had huge possibilities as a rider. He showed already immediately from the moment that he came from the Neo category. Yeah, that he can compete on time trials with the best, and he's still making steps in it every year. The first years he had still problems with climbs. He could do it on a final climb when the stage was flat, mm-hmm. and just one climb in the end. Then he could do high power, but when it was when there were more climbs during the day, then he got less and less. And then the last climb he was not able to do something. And with the years now that he had as a professional, he's also improving in that way. I think that giving himself already a lot of pressure, because he wants to show what he's capable of, to grow as a leader, I think we are working on that now. He never got in the position that he was a leader. He wasn't seeing himself as a leader. And now he's more and more, also because he will be the leader, one of the leaders for the team. He grew really into that that position now. They should also accept that he is one of the leaders of the team. And with that, yeah, you have some other influences coming to him. And yeah, he now have to make sure that it is clear for everybody what he wants and also what he is expecting from other riders. And as soon as he can give that to the group, I think that is already, then he made already a huge step, and we are working on it now with him. We did it before Paris-Nice, we did it in Paris-Nice, and we will also continue working on that the coming period. And you cannot say, yeah, some people are born leaders, and I don't think that you can say that he is a born leader. He's more a type of guy that he's really enjoying what he's doing, and he's really enjoying being on the bike, and he really wants to go for his goals. But he's more a guy that is easy in a race, isn't really stressed in a race, wants to take it as easy as possible. And till last year, he was more he had more the idea that when you are a leader, more stress is coming to you, and I don't like that really. But yeah, we have to show him with speaking about situations, with speaking to him, that that it doesn't give him stress when it's clear for him and when it's clear for other guys what we and he expecting from other guys. And that's a process we are working on, and that also takes time.
So that was Mark Reef on Tom Dumoulin. He was speaking at a time when things were had still not really started to improve for Giant Alpecin. Today at the buses, I spoke to Ivan Spekenbrink, the general manager of the team, about Dumoulin. We were speaking just before Dumoulin rode. In fact, while we were speaking, Tobias Ludvigsen took the leaderboard. He went into the hot seat as the fastest rider, and he ended up finishing fourth, a very good fourth, another young rider. And Dumoulin was still to ride, but he spoke about Dumoulin's prospects here at the Giro and what his main focus was, and the longer-term plan for him as well. So here is Ivan Spekenbrink.
There is a big motivation and obviously some pressure, but we don't want to give him pressure that he has to win, or we have prepared this day to be to that he on this day he can get the best out of his opportunity, about his ability. We've been working to that, and with the profile of a rider he has and the type of course is here and the magnitude of this big event, obviously you feel it's a chance. So he feels this is a chance for me, and that gives pressure less motivation, a bit of both, and that's where you have to work with that can inspire you. We will not we don't give the pressure him. You need to have the first place, you need to have the, because you don't have it in the hands. There is sometimes somebody else can be better. What we want is to get that he gets the best out of himself today, and that's already hard enough to do it on the days which really count.
He's had some bad luck this season, some illness and so on, and obviously the team has had terrible luck. John Degenkolb's back now. Dumoulin seems to be coming into form. Do you feel that things are starting to turn in your favour now?
Yes, what we said then, what happened in January, I mean, that was bigger than cycling. At that moment, we were really afraid that we would lose people. And the next phase was we would really be afraid that they wouldn't come back on the bike. And ultimately, now they are back on the bike. But what we said then, guys, what happened has happened. We have to accept it. It means that we have a big setback with the team. With the guys who should have scored in the races in the beginning of the year, they are just not there. It was not only John, it was Ramon Sinkeldam, it was Warren Barguil. So we have to accept it. We have to keep working. Everybody in its own role should get better. And then we should be realistic. You cannot ask a guy who has a very important role in teamwork, but who is not a finisher in Roubaix, you cannot expect him to do that. So we had to sit out our time, be calm, keep working. And the moment the guys get back and the team is getting complete, we know we have the confidence that again we have made a step and that we will have the success again. And well, the last week's Ardennes Classics we did really well, Romandie we did already well, so we are back again, and that's good. We didn't forget what happened, but we left it behind. In the end we came out of it good, so we can only be thankful for that. And now we are inspired again to show who we are.
And Tom obviously had his incredible performance at the Vuelta last year. A lot of people saw that as confirmation he could become a Grand Tour contender. He said that that's not his aim here. Nevertheless, are you keen and interested to see how he performs here, or are you very realistic that he has come here with a very different focus to the one he had at the Vuelta?
Yeah, here you should look long-term, short-term goals. We have a long-term project with Tom, and again we want to take the best out of him. He will be in 3 years' time at the top of his game, and then he can potentially be a Grand Tour contender. But for that, you need to grow your body as a cyclist. You need to grow experience. You need to grow mentally. So you need to make all the steps. You cannot ignore it. And then we believe he can do it. So to get there step by step, what we should do is not take the give him too much pressure that all of a sudden he should now already be the big favorite, because he isn't. So the first step is to really this year are nice targets in the time trials, in the Giro d'Italia, two beautiful time trials, in Rio is a great time trial, which are nice goals. That's a goal for him, but most important is those goals are again in function for year two and year three, when he can transform and grow into a Grand Tour contender. So great goal now, we really go for it, and that's in his development and next step in function of the years to come.
You are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the Giro d'Italia, supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Okay, you heard there again a little jingle for our sponsor for the Giro, Science in Sport, the best nutrition, sports nutrition company in the world, without a question. And they are offering 20% off all their products to listeners of the podcast. If you go to their website, www.scienceandsport.com, and enter the code SIS20, that's SIS20, you will get 20% off. Go for it. Now, we've been joined by somebody who we expect to be a regular fixture on the Giro.
He's already in the pink jersey.
No Giro.
Hello, listeners. So happy about this my comeback.
Well, Giro, only this week we've released our friend's special, which is your live performance in London a couple of months ago now, and it seems to have gone down very well.
Dear Richard, I must confess that night in London is still in my mind and has changed in a certain way my life. More confidence in myself, more relationship with our public that was in London, and so I hope that we could repeat as soon as we can, maybe in London, maybe not. I prefer, can you easily imagine where, but why not? Let's hope so.
You were able to put faces to Twitter handles, weren't you, Giro? How do you feel being here in Holland for the start of the Giro?
Well, not bad. I think worst, because I was not happy at the very beginning when I knew for the first time that Giro had started in Holland, because, you know, we are not near to my element. We are not near the sea, near the beaches, unfortunately. But it has been a good start. I mean, a lot of public in the streets, and certainly a kind of fairy tale for the end of this first time trial with the pink jersey for the local hero Dumoulin. So good.
Does it feel like the Giro when it's not in Italy?
Well, my opinion is maybe not, because I mean, to walk also in the street and don't listen to our language is a little bit strange. But I mean, you can easily see that it's a kind of strategy of all Grand Tours, not only of the Giro, to organize big start from abroad. But Richard, you know that for me it's not really important, this. I mean, this stuff is not really important.
Giro, what about this Japan business? Are we going to be in Japan in 2 years for the start of the Giro?
Really? It's a big news. Daniel, and you are giving me
a big news,
but the organization already knows this or not? Or you are the organizer of this
big...
You've
got friends in the organization. You work very close proximity to RCS Sport Mara Venue.
Well, about this, I can maybe have a lawyer in order to answer to this question, because without a lawyer, I don't want to answer. It's better.
So what percentage chances are of it starting in Japan in 2 years?
In 2 years, 1%.
1%. Wow. It's interesting that the foreign, overseas Grand Depart. I mean, we were in Belfast a couple of years ago for the Giro. How, you know, I was speaking to somebody involved in events a few days ago, and they were talking about the Giro and how much the Giro costs as compared to the Tour. Now, the Tour de France for Grand Depart is apparently now in the region of 15 to 20 million pounds. For the Giro, it's 3 to 5 million pounds. interestingly, with the World Championships, a bid mooted by Yorkshire, that the UK government has pledged £18 million to back that. Some controversy over that because the money will only go to Yorkshire, and that's put noses out of joint elsewhere in the UK, apparently, I believe. But, you know, the Giro at 3 to 5 million, when you look at the show that was put on today, the crowds that were out, is that good value compared to the 15 to 20 million for the Tour? I mean, did today here in Apeldoorn feel any less of an occasion than the Tour de France start in Utrecht last year?
It certainly didn't. I mean, the size of the crowds, what it looked like on TV, and a mention also for the sort of quite innovative start here in the centre of the velodrome. I was here for the World Trek Championships in 2011, and to actually start in the middle of the track and, you know, almost have a kind of a rock event type atmosphere in the centre of the velodrome there, you know, all the lights were dimmed and it was pink. A big crowd in there, lots of VIP opportunities to try and make a bit of money back for the organisers as well. You know, it's not just the fact that it's been successful, but every time the Grand Tours come to the Netherlands, the crowds come out in huge numbers, more so really, I think, than any of the other foreign Grand Departs that I've seen other than Yorkshire.
Should we hear, we went around the start this morning speaking to a few people about their tips for overall winners of the Giro. Should we hear our Vox Pops, Daniel?
You're in charge, Richard, so if you say we should, then I think we should.
Adam Yates, Orica GreenEdge, and I think Landa will probably win, but my outside bet is Esteban Chavez.
Eric Brooking, former Giro Italia stage winner, and finishing on the podium in the general classification. My prediction is in the first place Nibali, second Landa, and third Valverde.
Gaia Piccardi. For Corriere della Sera, Italian newspaper, I want to be patriotic, so I'm going to say Vincenzo Nibali. He has to win, and he will win the Giro.
This is Hans Ruggenberg from the Telegraaf. I think Tom Dumoulin will win the Giro d'Italia.
I'm Ivan Spekenbrink, Team Giant Alpecin. And for the overall victory, the GC, I expect the big favorites are Nibali, Landa and Valverde. Probably amongst those three, they will fight it out for pink.
Matt Stevens, working on the Giro for Global Cycling Network. I'm going for Mikel Landa of Team Sky.
Oh, Maximilian Chandri, BMC Racing Team Sport Director. I'd go full Italian, Nibali.
Brent Copeland, team manager from Lampre Merida. For me, the winner is going to be Nibali.
Douglas Ryder, team principal of Team Dimension Data for Quebec, and I predict Vincenzo Nibali will win the Giro d'Italia 2016.
Michael Rogers, and I'm an ex-Giro d'Italia stage winner and Tour de France.
My prediction for the top three in this year's Giro would be, in no particular order, Maika, I think Valverde will be there, and Nibali.
I'm Sonny Colbrelli, Bardiani CSF, and the next winner, Giro d'Italia, Bill Vincenzo Nibali.
Raymond Kerkers from the Telegraph from Amsterdam. I think Tom Dumoulin is going to win the Giro d'Italia.
Tim De Waele, sports photographer, and the winner of 2016 Giro for me is Vincenzo Nibali.
My name is Rod Ellingworth, work for Team Sky, and Mikel Landa is going to win the Giro. Why are you laughing?
O vincevo il Giro, avrei deluso tutta l'Italia. I either won the Giro, or I would have disappointed the whole of Italy.
What on earth was that, Daniel?
That was the Shark's Tale. New feature.
A new feature for the Giro. How
daily
exciting.
Feature. Every day we're going to read a line, or I'm going to read a line of Vincenzo Nibali's autobiography, Di Furore e Lealtà, which is very difficult to translate,
well,
actually.
Well, it's not Italian for the Shark's Tale, is it?
No, of ardour, fever, how would you pronounce that? And loyalty.
Okay.
Thanks. Basically means he's a very passionate man and he's a very loyal man.
So we're going to hear Nibali's story over the course of the Giro, a line a day. It must be a very short book.
We're going to hear nuggets that are in some ways that some days will be allegorical, some days will be cryptic, some days will be very graphic. And we hope to tell the story of Nibali's Giro through lines of his autobiography.
Essence of the man, a flavour of the man.
They seem to have photoshopped a tear onto the cheek of Vincenzo Nibali.
It's a very passionate tome. It's a very passionate yarn.
It's almost similar to the cover of David Miller's book in a way, isn't it? Although it looks like they've maybe not employed such an expensive photographer for that.
No.
Looks like it was done on an iPhone or something. Anyway, so that's good. That's tantalising, Daniel. That was a really tantalising opening to this new feature, and I look forward to a bit more of that.
As you said, you know, we heard there from all the pundits or direct sportifs, riders that we spoke to today at the start, and everyone's tipping Nibali, and, you know, as you
not
said,
everybody.
His autobiography, he either wins the Giro or the whole of Italy will be disappointed.
A couple of Dutchmen tipped Tom Dumoulin. That's a definition of double Dutch there, I think. But that was just in the immediate aftermath of his victory, so I think they were high on the excitement of that. But Nibali is a big favourite, isn't he?
Yeah, and I must admit I was very surprised by how strong the consensus was that Nibali was going to win, because we know, and I think Ciro is just behind us and he's on the phone too. Oh, here he is, in fact. Ciro has been telling us all week that Nibali is slightly nervous, slightly apprehensive, not too sure of his form, didn't go well in Trentino, felt that some of his teammates were going better than him. So to hear an overwhelming majority, really, of those tipsters backing Nibali was a surprise to me.
Who are we on the phone to there, Ciro?
I was talking to Paolo Slongo, the trainer of Vincenzo Nibali, but as you can imagine, dear Richard, dear Daniel, dear Lionel, we weren't talking about the stage of today.
And what were you talking about?
Yes, I mean, we have a kind of agreement that I can tell maybe for the first time to our listeners. Maybe nobody knows this, so it's really a good... I try to know in advance when Nibali will go for a period of a training camp to Passo San Pellegrino in Italy, because you know that from time to time Nibali trains in altitude in Passo San Pellegrino, and for example normally he goes there in June before the Tour de France, and I want to be sure to know the period of Vincenzo Nibali, because I don't want to go to Passo San Pellegrino. And so when Nibali decides the period, I take holidays. Yes. The most important, because some years ago, I remember, Richard, it was 4 years ago, after before the Tour de France of 2012, when Nibali got third, I spent 2 days in Passo San Pellegrino with him, and maybe was the and I was with him in the car during a long train of 7 hours between Dolomite mountains. Richard, I think the awful, the worst day of my life. And so I don't want to be any longer in Passo San Pellegrino with Vincenzo.
I hope your boss doesn't listen to this, because he'll be looking out for that holiday application. He's not going on an altitude training camp in the next 3 weeks, though, Ciro.
No, not.
What are his prospects here? How's he going? How was he? But did you mention today's stage at all to his coach?
Not really, but no. As a matter of fact, I spoke a little bit to Vincenzo after the stage. He was quite satisfied. I think that he had good feelings comparing to the last Giro del Trentino, in which he was not really happy. Only 10Ks is not a lot to say anything, but I was quite satisfied.
There was a wonderful moment on Eurosport during Liège-Bastogne-Liège a couple of weeks ago when he began to lose contact with the leaders, Nibali, and Rob Hatch was commentating, and he was saying, well, Nibali came here, wasn't too sure of his form and his fitness. And the very
laconic,
I was thinking for the word, very laconic Sean Kelly just offered, well, he knows now. It was a great moment of Sean Kelly commentary. Well, we were going to talk more generally about the Giro. What's going to happen? What's going to happen? What are the stages we should be looking out for in the first week, Daniel?
The first big, what they call in Italian, appuntamento, appointment, is Roccaraso. Would you say Nibali? I'm calling you Nibali now, Ciro. Your neck of the woods, not too far from Naples.
It's something that I could be happy to be known as Nibali. No, I don't think so, because I'm Ciro. I'm a great personality. I don't need to be called Vincenzo Nibali.
Here, Ciro,
not at all. No.
We're asking about the first appointment.
Yes, Daniel knows really well Italy, and Roccaraso, it's near to Naples. It's my home. And Roccaraso, it's a typical place in which people from Naples go to have a mountain holiday. It's not me, obviously, as you know, but yes. I mean, it's tough, but not extremely tough.
Daniel, it's an unfortunate bit of scheduling, really, that you're doing the first bit in the Netherlands here and then leaving, abandoning us. Richard and I are going to have to cope with Italy. I think I mean, how many words of Italian do we have between us? Not many. And we are going to have to cope with the first week in Italy. Any tips for us? What should we be looking out for down in the south?
Well, I'm not very familiar with the south of Italy, to be honest. I spend all of my time pretty much in the north. But, you know, we've talked about, I think we maybe mentioned the petty crime, didn't we, in Kilometre Zero that might come out in a day or two. As far as the stages are concerned, Lionel, there are a couple of gnarly little finishes. Praia Mare, which is on Tuesday, 10th of May. That could be a tough one. There's a climb near the end there. Sort of a puncher. Scattista, there's a new word for you. A scattista is kind of a puncher in Italian. Good one for them. I would look out there for Diego Lisi, someone like that. And then we've got the Stato Roccarazzo, which we've just mentioned, the first mountaintop finish. But, you know, not a lot is going to happen. It's kind of a fairly typical Giro first week, ending with a sort of medium mountain summit finish. I didn't envisage there being big gaps on general classification. We've talked to people here in Holland. It's probably not going to be too much wind the next couple of days. So as long as the finishes aren't too complicated, chaotic, hopefully everyone will stay upright and all the contenders should be still there when I rejoin you in Tuscany. I'm sure you'll enjoy the cuisine, Lionel.
I'm looking forward to that. Yeah, the best deep pan pizza joints in the whole of the south of Italy.
I'm so glad I'm not going to be around to see this for a week at least.
What's the time for flat white again, Daniel? I've forgotten. I did look it up on Google Translate.
How many days before these jokes get tired? For me and the listeners. Anyway, go on.
Anyway, I think they'll be, before we reach Italy, they'll be tired of these jokes. Shall we wrap it up for today? It is day one, after all.
It's been a bumpy old start, hasn't it?
We've got a long 3 weeks ahead of us.
It's going to be fine. It's going to be absolutely fine. I can't wait. I'm looking forward to it more than anything I've looked forward to for a long while.
Wow. Yeah, no, so am I. I'm really looking forward to it too. And in when we do get to the sea, we'll also take delivery of our car, which we're looking forward to. We'll unveil our car at some point on Tuesday. That's an exciting moment. We're in your mate's camper van at the moment, aren't we, Lionel?
Our mate, Simon the photographer, yeah, he's been out on the course. Haven't seen him, actually. I hope he's made it back okay. Normally would have expected him to have made his way back here.
Can I just say a final disclaimer before we get hate mail? The south of Italy is very beautiful. It's not all about petty crime. There's a lot more to offer. Great landscapes, great food, great wine. You're going to love it.
We can't wait. And we'll wrap up there and we'll return tomorrow, still in Holland. So for the moment, thank you very much, Daniel.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lionel.
Thank you.